Welcome to the OpenIC, the show where we talk to the movers and shakers in M&A, the teams behind the deals, and how the deals really went down. This show is brought to you by FinTalent.io, the hiring and project platform for M&A and strategy professionals. I'm your host, Toby Liebsch. All right, welcome to the FinTalent podcast. Today I'm joined by Andreas Andy von Hirschhausen. Do you say Andy or Andy? What's your international way of going?
Hey, Toby. So usually internationally people call me Andy.
Yeah. And then they started with your last name, I suppose. It must be a nightmare for non-German speakers to pronounce.
Yeah. While backpacking 2 years in Asia, I had a lot of fun filling out visa applications. You can imagine.
And the letters don't fit in the box. Well, Andy von Hirschhausen, welcome. You're the co-founder of Reach Finance and the host of the Wall Street Lab podcast. And today we will dive into the world of bankers that become entrepreneurs, bankers, entrepreneurs that find challenging situations in the industry. The situation that financial advisors are in right now and what you think about that. I think that's going to give us a couple of interesting talking points for sure. But first of all, congratulations. So you closed your seed round for Reach Finance last month. That must be exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a cool experience. So I've never founded a startup. I've never had a seed round before. So this was very interesting, especially since, I don't know, you and your listeners, you probably follow the venture capital news a bit.
Yep.
Funding dried up right around when we closed the round. Yep. So I would say that was a lucky coincidence, but I hope we were prepared to, you know, take care of our luck.
Perfect timing. Yeah. And I saw you had a couple of angels in that group, right? So just walk us a little bit through, okay, who financed your deal and how did you actually meet them? Because that's actually an interesting topic as well for new entrepreneurs and people that are looking at that a little bit. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, as we are here on a podcast, and as you said, I also am a podcast host, I'm gonna elaborate a bit further just because I love to encourage people to start podcasts because at the end of a long background story, you will realize it kind of all started with my podcast. Nice. So I did a podcast. I started it way before I even thought about doing a startup.
Yeah.
And one of my guests was somebody from the Business Angel Network Frankfurt Rhein-Main, yep, which is like a non-profit organization of business angels, yep, in the Frankfurt area. And so it's just like pure curiosity. I had him on the podcast. I talked about what do you as an angel investor look like? What does your network try to do for startups? Yep. How do they try to promote the regions? And yeah, and then it came around to actually finding financing for my startup. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it helped me in the application process because they're very strict. They have a very clear application process, but it kind of helped me to understand how angel investors work and what they are looking out for and how does maybe that particular even network kind of think about the startups they're doing.
Nice.
And I think that gave me a bit of an advantage for the application process. Then we pitched there, and because I kind of know how important this angel network is, this particular one, and I knew what kind of angels are there. A lot of bankers, a lot of people that really are into the financial matters that I'm trying to solve with my company. Yeah. So I kind of knew this was a Champions League for me.
Yeah.
This was not, you know, like I had to have my pitch down to the last minute. I had all the questions need to prepare.
Absolutely.
In other pitch events before, I could like practice. I knew, you know, like if it's like a smaller network or like maybe some friends and family, angel investors or people I could introduce, I could like practice it a bit. I could refine my pitch, but I knew like that day it had to be perfect.
Yes.
So all of this work, trying, prepping, leading up to that one day. And then I think the pitch went pretty well. We had 3, 4, 5 requests just coming out from that one meeting. And then it kind of the interested party, it kind of like came a lot from there. So this one guy's like, oh yeah, I have another friend that might be interesting. That might be interested in investing. And then just like, okay, yeah, I have another person that it might be interested. So all of our angel investors are somehow connected to that one pitch with that one angel network. And it kind of like nearly half the route just came from there. And then we had an introduction to Dave Hessen, which is the state where Frankfurt is in. Based venture capital investor. So they kind of invest the money of the EU and the state of Hessen. Yeah. And we approached them to see if they want to do the rest of the round. And they said yes. And so I guess that's also maybe one of the reasons why we could avoid this funding crunch, right? Because public, on the one hand, exactly. Yeah. We had public investors, plus we had angel investors, which are not so deeply affected as venture capital investors from the funding crunch.
Nice, congrats. That's exactly what people kind of misunderstand about podcasts. You know, they kind of think, okay, oh, you're actually creating content, you're advertising or whatever. But also the reason we're doing this podcast, I mean, similar to you, is like mostly just interest and a good opportunity to talk to interesting people. And it just gives you that opportunity just to learn and then actually leverage that learning. I mean, even this, like, I mean, the public speaking part, but also just, you know, talking to interesting people that you probably could never talk to otherwise. Like, as few people are going to agree, just like, oh, can I have a half an hour random meeting with you? You know, but, oh, can I ask half an hour about that topic or whatever? It's like, sure, let me present myself, you know? So very, very underrated opportunity, especially in the finance space, because...
100%. I always say the podcast is just an excuse for me to talk to amazing people, to reach out to them. The people I had on the show, they would never even think about speaking even a minute with me if it wasn't for like, by the way, we are like great rated finance podcast, and we had, you know, and then it kind of like it there's a kind of a flywheel, right? But at first you really have to work hard. You have to talk to your professor, maybe you have to talk to like people, you know, get an intro. But then in the end, we managed to get, for example, Howard Marks or Monish Papadai on the podcast. After that, with that names on the podcast, you're just like, people come to you, it's like, hey, can I please come on your show? And people that I would like would be the Olymp of finance, would I would never thought to approach or dare to approach, they'd like now come to us and like, hey, can I be on your show? That's which amazing. Is really cool.
That's a podcast's dream, really, for sure. That's really amazing. And let's actually dive a bit into your journey, Andy, because that podcast was kind of, I think you started a podcast in 2017 or 18, I think. So,
just like 3 or 4 years ago. I really have to remember the exact year.
That was way before you started Reach Finance, at least.
Way before. So the podcast was started by two friends of mine. Yeah. And then I met one of them, Luke, and he kind of was, I loved his podcast. It was the first time I ever listened to any podcast, was the Wall Street Lab. Yeah. And then I loved it so much. I said, hey, I have like 10 people that you should interview out of my contact list. And he was like, you know what? Do it yourself. And so that's how I became a co-host. And now because the other two guys are like really, really busy, so I'm like kind of taking it over. Nice. But yes, I started the podcast way before I even thought about founding a startup. Yeah.
Because originally you actually just like me, you also did kind of a dual studium, you know, there's no English term for this. Like I always have struggled explaining that because like to non-German speakers, even the concept of like an Ausbildung, like a trainee kind of ship is like quite hard to grasp, right? So, but you did that at Deutsche Bank, I think a year before I started mine in Bayer. So you kind of went down this retail bank kind of training path. I mean, very broad, of course. You can take many different paths from that start, and then navigated more into the fintech, right? So you worked in fintech for quite a while, with two or three different capacities, different companies, different startups, scale ups, until you eventually reached your point where you're now with Reach, right? So what I found interesting about that with the last company you worked with, Finsight, right? There was kind of it's tech platform to help financial advisors, right? And now with Reach, you're essentially trying to cut out the financial advisor, right? So tell me a bit about that transition, like what happened there and what's your, why are you so angry about financial advisors?
Why am I saying Greenwood Financial Advisors? I think, so I'm reading a lot on how to help retail people invest better and get their finances together. And even though I don't think I will learn much in terms of knowledge anymore, yeah, just being in the space for 10 years, but I always am interested in how do people explain, yeah, it, right? So I read Tony Robbins's Money or Tony Robbins's Unshakable. And I think he puts it really well that some of the financial advisors, they really are out to get you. Some.
Yeah.
In for your German listeners, Jan Böhmermann, yeah, from Casino Royale, yeah, did a really nice episode on DVAG. But a lot of people just, you know, they don't know much better. Yeah. They don't have, you know, all the qualifications. They don't have a CFA. They don't have, they haven't worked for 10 years in the bank, right? They don't know any better. They're like, you know, they came from another job. They see, okay, here's good money. Some get honestly trapped from the companies.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a lot of people that really mean well, that really want to provide you with the best possible solution. Yeah. So you can't, you know, like beat them all with one stick. It's very differentiated. Some don't know better. Some, there's a really famous quote. I can't remember the author, but it's really hard to, cut that out. It's basically if you lie, if your income depends on you not understanding something, yeah, then it's a really bad spot to be in, right? And if you as a financial advisor don't understand how bad the products you are selling, yeah, to your clients is,
no,
like is your livelihood depends on it, your income depends on not understanding how bad the products are, yeah, that you're selling, I think that's a very bad industry. And that's why I kind of saw, and I know I worked with some of the, at Deutsche Bank, I worked with some of the smartest people I ever met in my life, yeah, and I kind of, for me, it was very early on, I was sure I wanted to get out of retail just because it wasn't for me, at least on the advisory side. So I was always interested in, like, yeah, big financial markets, but even there, nobody was out to get anyone. But it's just, you know, it's the job. You have certain restrictions, yeah, and it's the same for all the banks. You have certain restrictions if you work at a bank. Even if an independent financial advisor, you have to decide: do I want to make a good living, or do I want my client to have a good, yeah, life and make a good living? And I think there's just an inherent big conflict of interest that I want to change. Yeah. There are people that advise you on a fee basis, but it's just really expensive. It costs you like at least $1,000. And if you're 25, and imagine what you can do with $1,000.
Yeah.
But
man,
the thing is, it's going to save you hundreds of thousands of euros later on if you invest $1,000 a, yeah, day instead of going to a financial advisor. Or I also love to be on Reddit, and people there are really great. They have really good ideas. Yeah. And I also wonder, do you ever benchmark your time and, like, you know, put an hourly wage on the time you're spending researching stocks, going on YouTube, reading books? Like, do you do that? And is, yeah, it still worth it instead of just investing in MSCI World?
That's such an important point. Yeah. Because all that research also amounts up to something, and it's also, yeah, I just invest in ETFs because I just, like, no, I don't have the time. I don't have the time to look into all that stuff. And I'm yeah, just, you know, I'm not going to outperform the market anyway. So that's like me. It's just like putting my ETFs, the most boring way to route, you know, not a customer for anyone. I'm just putting it in there every month. But what you mentioned is exactly right. Especially as a younger person, there's just not so much disposable income. And then it's also more important to invest that thoughtfully, right? I made that experience like the hard way myself when I did my, in my degree, in a way. I think I started with a salary of, you know, the training salary, I think it was like 800-900 euros, you know, which is good because most students don't get any money, right? And I had like 800-900 euros, you know, and I think it went up to like 1600-1700 in like year two or three, right? And so we had this program with the private kind of Altersvorsorge, you know, the kind of private pension fund kind of from the company that I was working with, right? And they had this model where you could just put in like a certain amount of your holiday money or your kind of vacation money, you know, your 13th salary in a way. You could just put that into like some sort of private pension fund, right? And the numbers looked really promising, right? I was like, oh, it's like a really good return on that stuff and everything. I've got to put all my vacation money into those pension funds, right? And so I essentially missed out on like a couple of thousand euros, which I could have used really well back then. And now I think I'll get like $50 a month when I turn like 65 or something like that, you know? But I could have really made use of those like 2,000 or 3,000 euros back then when I was like 19, 20, right? So, I was really lacking some impartial advice at that stage because it was just like, oh, that's what it's supposed to do. It's normal, right? So that's what we just kind of get tricked into. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we want to do with REACH. We want to trick you, but into making good decisions for yourself.
Yeah.
Right? This can be an amazing, if the company you worked with had a good system for that. Imagine if they had a system to help you put it into ETFs. If at 19 years old, you put 1,500 euros every year into an ETF, I don't have to tell you about compound interest, what that does when you're 65.
Yeah.
Like that money is insane. Whoever I talked to in the journey and I really, really explained them compound interest.
Yeah.
It blows their mind. And compound interest, especially also for costs, that talks about, that's why dudes like, oh yeah, those financial advisors also have to live off of something. So I'm okay with paying 5% today or 2% every year. But if you understand compound interest, to have ever listening to this is, if you want to invest, understand compound interest. It's one of the only things you really have to understand, and then your life will be so much better.
Yeah, I think as entrepreneurs, it's always the same as well, right? Like you, I think I posted about that on LinkedIn today, you know, be impatient when it comes to execution and be patient in the long run, because these little steps you take, they just bring you so much further in the long run. But it's so difficult to understand. It's really not something our brains can kind of can't really grasp properly in a way. So it's so important to remind ourselves of that concept of compound interest when it comes to investing, but also when it comes to any action, any long-term goal, really, right?
Just had that on my head. Do you know Naval Ravikant?
Of course, yeah. The how to get rich without getting lucky.
Exactly. So I'm just reading his book, The Element of Naval Ravikant. Yeah. And one of the things that, like, nearly everything good in life comes from compound interest. And that means relationships, right? If I look back on my best friends, maybe until the year before they became best friends, they're just like, you know, just somebody in my circle of friends. But like always that one extra year, you just grow so much closer in all the business relationships. The really, the crazy steps, they come at the end. They come at the very, very end. And the longer you stay in, the same with the podcast, right? Our big breakthroughs in terms of like who we could get on the show, they came at the very end, right? And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger from there.
Yeah.
When I can get Monish Papai to make me an intro, well, the person's going to come on the show, right? If there's amazing conversations in this too, right? Mm-hmm. But if it's like the professor, if he asks, you know, he can just ask so much off the network.
Yeah.
But if you have like 100 people on the podcast that you can ask for recommendations, or in your network, not even podcast, in your network that you can ask.
Yeah.
The compound interest, the really big explosion in your net worth comes in the end.
Yeah. And that's such a smart thing that you're saying there, because I think it's very easy for us to just assume, oh, compound interest, that's this thing where your money increases and you put 1 cent in 2000 years ago and now it's like gazillions of euros. But it really like reflects in every part of our life. I mean, it's very well researched actually that to make friends, it's not really depend, like people always assume, okay, I make friends with people that are similar to me, that are, you know, that have similar interests, that maybe look alike or whatever. No, it's actually very well researched that to make friends, you just have to be close to people, you know. There's been this study where they kind of took like a classic college dorm and they kind of had like, you know, two rows, kind of like two floors of apartments. And then like it was like four rooms each with like two kind of stairs on each side. And they kind of like tracked over time, like which of them became friends. And it was very clear that like that if you're close to somebody, just like the door next door, literally the room next door, it's way more likely to become a longtime friend. Whereas if you even live next to a stairs, you know, that stair is already like a break where you would like, even if it's technically just a room next door, you would still not make friends with them that easily. And it really like the podcast is a good example, you know, kind of like reach people consistently, you know. It's the same when you post on LinkedIn, you know, when you get content, people just see your face more often, you know. And going to events, like also if I look at my career, like most of my good personal connections or like business connections came from me kind of meeting people, attending events, and that kind of accumulates over time again, and then it pays off. So that's like just also to make friends, to build personal connections, also just to make business introductions. That just like people shouldn't forget that just like sitting behind a computer not talking to anyone, that's also a negative compound that you accumulate over time. Yeah.
Even in the gym, you know, like which rep is the one that makes your muscles grow? The last one, you know, like we're really pushing. The first 11 reps are like for nothing. Yeah. Only the 12th rep counts, right? So this is compound interest, man.
Compound interest. That's like, we should make t-shirts with like compound interest, baby. That's how it works.
I love that. Let's do it.
It's compounding, yeah. Andy, taking it a little back to your product, because like what I wondered when I saw your product the first time. So there's so much free paid advice on the internet on how to invest, right? There's so many like YouTube videos. There's like a gazillion different courses on how to invest and everything. And now your product is kind of in that, like it's kind of like immediately associated with that same niche, right? And you say, okay, we use like fancy algorithms or whatever. But like, how is your product actually different from just this advice out there, right?
The thing is, what we try to achieve is make it easy and simple for you. You said there's a gazillion pages, YouTube videos, but which one can you trust? Which one are you going to? Where do you start, for Christ's sake, right? If there's a million options, you have no options.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You don't, I feel like people that I talk to, they got completely overwhelmed. Either they're super nerding out in this and I love it. And like, if I read Reddit, I'm like, holy cow. Those like Reddit people know so much more about finance than I ever could. Yeah. And it really blows my brain. But on the other hand, the normal you and me, you need a starting point. And the thing is, you need someone to condense all that knowledge down to a very simple process, to very simple steps, and this is what we're trying to do.
Nice.
And then plus time, your money is worth money, right? If you decide to spend even as much as 10 hours a year on research, on doing those things, on watching YouTube videos, 10 hours you could spend somewhere else. And if you really look at what is a hourly rate that you would give yourself, right? You wouldn't say, oh, my time is worthless. If you're really good at your job, like your hourly rate is at least minimum 100 euros or something. Yeah. So if you spend 10 hours, even a year looking at that stuff, you just spend 1,000 euros right there.
Yeah.
If we can condense it for you into say 100 euros a year, well, we just saved you 900 euros in time. Yeah. If you go to a financial advisor, get this done, well, a good one and that you pay for costs you $1,000. We do it 400 euros. We save you 900 euros right there. If you go, God forbid, you go to an independent financial advisor that gets paid commission. Mm. And then compared to that, you come to us. We just saved you 100,000 euros. Because we're going to tell you buy ETFs and not, you know, like this super expensive 2% annual cost fund, right?
Yeah.
This is what we want to do. We just, in the end, my vision is to make a product that's where if you go through the process, in the end, we tell you, Toby, do this or do that. You're like, I could have done that myself. That's so simple. Yes. But kind of like you pay us to keep it simple for you, right? Because what is really difficult is if you think when you pay for something, the answer has to be very complex. that's a very bad thought to have. Because then you're going to tell companies, make it look complex and sell me complex things. But in finance, often, very, very often, complexity is the enemy of good.
Absolutely.
And complexity is the enemy of great, right? So honestly, let's see how people will adopt to our kind of like new model of thinking in terms of what we're trying to provide. Because I think it's a hard jump to make. But if people can make the shift in mindset, it's going
to
be good for
them. It's an interesting challenge because you're kind of really trying to sell the long-term success. It looks like a lot of money, like, $100, you know, that's like, it's money I wouldn't spend if I would just use my own app or whatever. But it's like, it's a different, difficult sell, but I think it's like the on logical level, it definitely makes sense. So let's see how people are. It's going to be an interesting case. It's always difficult to push these new models to the market. But
on the other hand, if that works, if people understand, and I feel like there's a shift in mindset, just look at how Proton Mail exploded and gained in popularity, right? No ads, but we sell you subscription. So many subscription models now coming up. N26 is super successful, and it's basically a subscription model, right? I think there's more and more subscription model nowadays because people understand if you don't pay for something, you are the product.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Let's dive a bit into your entrepreneurial route. We kind of like tackled it a little bit earlier already, but I kind of want to understand a little bit what the step is, because many of our listeners, many of our readers, many of our talents are in that situation where they are bankers, not necessarily retail bankers, more as like investment bankers, in private equity. They're in a nice and in a good job that's just not fulfilling necessarily, and they want to start entrepreneurial routes, right? They have this entrepreneurial itch, like we call it, right? I have calls like 4 or 5 times every day with someone telling me like, oh yeah, I make a lot of money, I have a good job right here, I know that on a rational level, but I also like there's this entrepreneurial itch that I would like to scratch, right? And that's obviously happens with people that are high performance, high achievers. They're always looking for something new, something different, and entrepreneurial routes are very desirable to these kind of people, right? And you fulfilled that, right? Walk me a bit through that, like when you first noticed that moment when you first noticed that entrepreneurial itch, like what was that? Was it always there for you, or did it develop over time, and how did it happen?
So I'm a bit ashamed even to admit that when I started in banking, I was super in love with this whole, the Wall Street movie, you know, greed is good, money never sleeps. I even had a tailored suit that wrote on the inside, money never sleeps. So I was really deep into the, let's become a big investment banker, you know, like exactly. Like let's be a mass of the universe. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted to be that. And then it's like, I started on the trading floor at Deutsche Bank, and that's the thing about me. And that's, I can also recommend what we said about, I talked to a lot of people. I was an intern.
Yeah.
So I was a nobody in the investment bank, you know, like, but I was just curious. And that's maybe one important lesson from the podcast that I just want to throw in here. I speak at the end of the day, I ask nearly all my guests, what career advice can you give to young professionals? And nearly all of them say, be curious. And I noticed how that paid off for me in hindsight. I didn't know it in the beginning, but in hindsight, it really paid off for me because I ran around. I was like, hey, you guy, what are you working on? Oh yeah, I am an equity trader. I'm like, what's that? Like, how do you do that? I'm in equity structuring. I'm in fixed income sales. I do this, I do that. And that's how I kind of like built up a mini network. Mm. People knew me at the end of my internship just because I was really interested in the work. If you make a conversation about yourself, this managing director, global head of something doesn't want to talk to you. Everybody loves to talk about themselves. If you go, hey, global head of XYZ, what do you do all day long? he or she will love to talk to you all day long.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. And I asked him for advice. And like, I noticed something that really strikes me to this day. There were people, early 30s, managing directors, taking home a ton of money. Like, I don't know how much, but a ton of money. And then there were people, same age, vice presidents, still making really good money, but just not about half or a quarter of the managing directors. And they were both the same happiness level. And I asked, what's the difference in your career? And the people that were super happy with their good but not amazing income, they said, well, I took studies abroad. The managing directors that had this, like, double the level at the same age, they were like, I would have thrown it all the way to take a year abroad into another university. I'm like, all right, I know what I got to do, right? Yeah. I got to take a year abroad because if I'm 67 and I'm retired, I can't travel. Like, yes, you can, but how much fun is it going to be going to the full moon party in Koh Phangan if you're 65 years old? It's not going to be much fun, but it's going to be much more fun at 23. And that's why when I decided to do my studies abroad in Singapore and I combined kind of like education, so my CV wouldn't look completely bombed by taking 2 years off, but I managed to combine education with traveling. And this is a long way of saying, like, when I traveled, I really noticed money and career is not everything. And there's so much good you can do in the world with finance if you do it right. And that's where kind of my shift in mindset starts from, like, maybe I don't want to be a master of the universe. Maybe I want to do something else. Then I got into the whole fintech space and I came back to Germany, started at a fintech company. It was like, yeah, it's just like too big, too corporate. And then I got approached by fintech startup Finsight, and the guy, normally my CV, when I reapplied at banks, the people were like, what the heck is that? You've been in banking, you've been in tech, you did a master in financial engineering, you did a CFA, like, don't you have any focus in your life, right? Like, I jumped in finance all over the place. And the founder of that startup, he was like, I love that because I need someone that understands technology. I need someone that understands finance, and I need someone that understands sales. You don't find it very easily in banking because in banking careers are very linear, right? You become an associate, then you become a VP, then you become director, then you MD. It's like, it's all in the same line. It's all like, it's an exponential line, but it's all still one line. I was all over the place. I was like a scatter graph. And what enticed me about this was like, oh yeah, I can, you know, I was the first sales at this company. I could start something on my own. I could build the team. I could learn everything from hiring, from doing the commission structure, from pricing. I did everything. I worked with partners. I did business development. I did relationship management, closing. That's kind of when it started to like, okay, maybe I want to build something on my own. And I was like, okay, next level is to build my own company from the ground up, and really see if I can do that. Because you always have this thing in mind, things are not going so well. Let's see if I can do, you know, if I build something from the ground up, how I would do that.
Yeah. So you've had your little trial run, if you will, joining a smaller fintech. Now looking back at you started Reach, and that's like really the first time you're throwing yourself in those cold waters. You know, you're jumping head first into the pool, you know, not knowing what to expect. What were some of the skills that you learned? And I'm going to ask the reverse question after this, but what were some of the skills that you learned in your finance career that really helped you? And of course, people will think, oh, he's a finance guy. He doesn't need a CFO. He can like build a balance sheet, but we both know that like to be a founder, to be an entrepreneur, reading a balance sheet and building, that's not the most important part. It's part of it. But what were some of the skills that helped you make that start successful?
Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is I have the power of hindsight now. So I can kind of pick and choose what I'm going to talk to you about, right? It's always like that. But again, it comes back to maybe a bit of luck, a bit of preparedness, and just curiosity. So I've done sales for most of my life. I was in some kind of sales role. So that really helped me to pitch. Because at the end of the day, what you do as a startup founder, you pitch, you sell all day long. You sell to your clients if it's B2C or B2B. You sell to your employees, you sell to your investors. You sell your vision, you sell. So I think this really, really helped me out. I mean, many people ask me, oh, you did the CFA, you did Kaya. Was it worth it? Did you learn much? Or was it just, you know, tick a box on an application? And before I founded my startup, I would have said, yes, it's just to tick a box on the application. I didn't learn so much new. It didn't really help me. It's just if a sales guy walks into the room and he has a CFA, he's a CFA chart holder, it's like, all right, he's not completely full of nonsense, right? He actually knows a bit. He actually went through the words. But now, a lot of what I'm trying to do in like kind of the financial modeling part of Reach is based on the CFA learnings, right? Especially on level three.
Yeah.
So I think that helped me to develop the whole entire concepts around finance, how finance should be done. And I think this was really good having this knowledge about finance. This really helped me, but I guess the biggest part was just selling and sales and also like being interested in so many different things, because as a startup founder, I have to do everything all day long. One moment I'm like researching for how to build the financial model. Then next thing is like, I'm a product manager. Then I'm like the chief product officer, like talking about the roadmap, the vision. And the next moment I'm booking flights for my employees to go to an event, right? Yeah. Because we don't have a procurement manager or something. You kind of really have to do all of that all at once.
Yeah.
And I think this has been really helpful in having so many different parts to my career.
Yeah. And now let's reverse that question a little bit. What were the traits as a banker where you noticed, oh, this is actually like something I have to unlearn now?
Good question. I've never really thought of that. Maybe to say that's not my job. You know, having kind of this, my job is to sell. I let the structurers do their work and I let the traders do their work. Mm-hmm. The good thing for me, I was always interested in what they're doing. Yeah. So I kind of never was so boxed in. But I think this is something that I had to unlearn, to like really, it's as a founder, it's always your job. Everything is your job.
Yeah. And you have to employ a bit more of lateral thinking to get to the goal. That's true. Do you think that bankers have it easier to start companies than other people, especially when you have this like high performance background? You know, people like are really pushed into like a very like the cliche is they can deal with the stress that founders obviously have. But do you think it's easier for bankers than for other people, or would you say like salespeople can just as easily found a company?
My gut feeling says it's just as easy for anybody. It's there. That's the nice thing about founding a company. There's a million and five ways to do it. And what I really would suggest, go find a techie. You need a techie in your team. This is honestly when Reach like took off in the funding talks, when we really got some traction, when we also got a techie on board. Yeah. This is, also, again, Naval said, if you can do code and one other thing, you're good, right? Then I think this is something as a banker, if you want to start a company, learn to code or find someone that can code. I think this is super, super, super important.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think there's just so many paths to a successful company that anyone can do it. There's a slow way, you know, for people that earn a really good salary and they like, okay, let's do it on the weekend and I can take the salary to pay people to work for me maybe, or, and I do it on the weekend. I don't need investors, which has pros and cons. I'm grateful I have my investors because they're so well connected, and they can make so many intros. One of our investors really helps, like, or many of them help operationally if I have questions to the financial model, if I have questions to asset allocation. But there's also super great benefits to not having investors. And if you have a very, very good paying job, then you maybe don't need investors and you have more freedom, right? Yeah. So I think there's a path in a way for everybody.
Absolutely. Beautiful words to close. Andy, if our listeners want to reach out to you, where can they reach you? Now is your slot to pitch you and your company.
Yeah, if you want to reach out, my email is Andy, A-N-D-I, or Andy-Y, actually, I have both set up. So at reach.finance, reach, like, you know, to reach for something. If you want to find out more about the podcast, it's thewallstreetlab.com. And also here, Andy@thewallstreetlab.com. This is the two places you can find out more about me. And yeah, I'm on LinkedIn. I'm everywhere. Just mention that you heard the FinTalent podcast, because I got many requests. I ignore most of them. If you don't tell me where this connection comes from. And yeah, I love to talk to people. Again, we talked about it, compound interest. I love to talk to people that don't want to know more about the app. They want to talk about the podcast. I just want to talk about finance. Honestly, it's always fun.
Fantastic, Andy. Thanks so much for your time.
Toby, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us in the OpenIC. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe to our show wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also leave a review, that really helps, and connect with us for feedback on fintalent.io. See you next time.